Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. Dodd-Frank 2010. They can keep your money. Are the banks in trouble? Well, yes, they are. Are you in danger? You could be. I would never have a retirement in the bank for that reason. Noble Gold can help you. 877-646-5347. I am a customer of Noble Gold. Say it again, 877-646-5347. Our guest in this particular segment is Lishai Lemesh, and he's with one of the great organizations I have so much respect for, Shenyun. And if you've never seen the show, you'll never see such a display of not only rational politics, but athleticism is off the charts. And as a former college basketball coach, I would like to have recruited some of those people because they are so athletic in their performance. It was so moving and entertaining. But what we're going to talk about here is not just that particular beauty of the Chinese culture brought to life in America, but what we're going to be talking about is what's really going on with China, the repression and so forth. And we've done shows on this, but this story never ends, and it just seems to keep expanding. Lishai, thank you so much for joining us. First time guest on the Common Sense Show. Great to have you here. I know that you've got a really good background here, a master's degree from the London School of Economics. How did you end up being the MC of this great entertainment organization?
Well, Dave, thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a bit of an unexpected twist in my career. I was really interested in human rights in China and international relations. By the time I joined Shenyun, I was already blacklisted in China. I was had experienced being arrested and beaten up there. And so I was more focused on human rights exposing what was going on under the Chinese Communist Party in China. And I'd been approached by a friend, actually, to MC a performance. This was before Shenyun was started. This was in Los Angeles. And they said, this is going to be a performance of Chinese culture and singing and music. And I said, what are you talking about? There's genocide going on in China right now. People are being thrown into labor camps, being tortured. We're getting these reports every day. What song and dance? And they said, well, actually, you'll see art has power that maybe you haven't seen in academic work or in journalism. I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I emceed a couple shows, and I guess I did a good job. I got called back. Next time was Radio City Music Hall. So it was 7,000 people in the audience, and it was a huge Chinese New Year gala. Again, put on by some of the same people who put on the first one. And part of what they were trying to do is show real traditional Chinese culture. You know, they said the Chinese embassy and the consulates, they put on these shows, but this doesn't represent us. It doesn't represent our heritage. Let's put on our own performance. And after that big success, this was 2006, that summer, some of the same people who were involved in those early performances said, you know what, this seems to be something that is needed to show the world what traditional Chinese culture is really like. And also, as you hinted at, expose some of the atrocities in China through performing arts and show the courage of the resistance to it and the hope as well as the brutality of the Chinese Communist Party. So they said, let's do this for real. Let's create a performing arts company called Shenyun Performing Arts. It was established in New York State, upstate New York, a couple hours from the city. And I tried out. I got the gig as the first MC. And I've been with the company now going on 20 years. Done about 2,000 shows all over the world. I've seen the company grow from one troupe that tours around the world to now eight that tour at the same time. It's been quite a ride, but not something that I anticipated when I started learning Chinese history in college.
I would say to my audience, if you've never seen the performance, be prepared to be amazed. My friend Chris Kitsey, who's done a lot of business in China, actually gave us the tickets. He said, Dave, I want you to go see this. It's going to be phenomenal for you. And he was right. And like I said, the thing I walked away with, there was clearly the political messages about the repression of the CCP and the PLA. But the thing that really struck out was how professional the performers are, how talented they are. It's just off the charts. I mean, if that's representative of Chinese culture, they should be winning the Olympics in about every sport.
Yeah, I mean, they're athletes. They really are. And the thing is, it's sad because they're such great ambassadors for Chinese culture and all that China was and could be again. And they're banned from China. We can't perform in China. So the people you see when you see Shenyun, these are people who are exiled dissidents in a way, all for just doing their art. We've had people from China escape and join us. We've had people try to join us and get arrested in China. We have choreographers in our group who experienced persecution in China, people who were jailed. But yeah, they're the best at what they do. They train in New York. They have a school, both an academy that's a high school and a college called Feitian Academy of the Arts and Feitian College. And these are really the best institutes for classical Chinese dance and music outside of China, maybe even including China. There's maybe only a couple other schools that could compete with them. And so they train very systematically. It's a young person's game because it's so athletic. It's in many ways more similar to gymnastics than it is to, let's say, ballet or other forms of
That's
dance.
true. No, I
You see
agree.
all these flips and tumbling, and they do all these amazing things. And so the way the show is structured, it's about 20 pieces, each about 4 or 5 minutes long. And it's different stories, different dynasties, different literary classics like the Monkey King or historical heroes, Mulan and UFA and things like that. And then between those, I just come on and introduce the next piece. So I get to watch from a side stage night after night how high they jump into the air and flip and all these amazing things that they do. And there's the orchestra. They're talented, but I would say they're also driven by a sense of mission, which really is the power behind what they do. This sense that they can revive this lost heritage and also show the world what China's really like.
You know, it's interesting. And when you look at the death camp situation in the Holocaust, and you look at the Jewish subcultures that were in the camps, a lot came out of that too. When people lose freedom, they find other ways to become creative. Like one of the premier psychologists, Viktor Frankl, came out of Auschwitz. And so this is not unusual what we see. People get creative. But what I really like that this organization does is it really sends a political message. You're not just entertained, you're getting educated, because our media in America, our mainstream media, which has lower numbers than we do, they seemingly turn a blind eye to all the repression and abuse that's going on inside of China. Do you agree with that statement?
Oh, absolutely. So the parallel there, just the one example of the Holocaust then and now, there's a book called Buried by the Times by a professor named Laura Leff. And she wrote about how the New York Times buried the story of the Holocaust in the back pages of the paper, gave it very little attention, had a fellow traveler, a correspondent in Germany who really sided with the Nazis, and all the way to the end, barely covered it. And we're seeing the same thing with the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China. These are the people who started Qinyin. They're people who were just interested in meditation. They were not political. Some of them were even Chinese Communist Party members. They liked meditating in the park. And one day, the Chinese Communist Party says, "There's too many people doing this. More than a Chinese Communist Party, you can't have this independent faith and ideology. This is banned." And they said, "No, we're not going to just give it up just because you tell us, because this has brought tremendous benefit to our lives, both physically and mentally." And so they wouldn't give it up, and then they would start getting arrested, thrown into camps, and murdered. And the numbers are staggering. We're looking at organ harvesting and just really large-scale atrocities in military hospitals in China. And where's the New York Times in covering this? They covered it a little bit in the beginning, in a very odd way, that often sided with the Communist Party, and then they completely disappeared for about 20 years. And now what we're seeing, maybe we can get into this a little bit, is this part of this disinformation campaign that really comes from Xi Jinping and from Beijing. And all of a sudden, the New York Times is interested in his story again, but they're not interested in covering the atrocities and the genocide happening in China. They're interested in nitpicking with Chinyin about our work hours and the age of the performers and things like this. And of course, this gets picked up in other media, and because it's a paper of record, and their one-sided coverage includes informants who have undisclosed conflicts of interest, including people who are associated with the Beijing Dance Academy, our number one competitor, and an institution of the Chinese Communist Party, and they don't disclose this. And this just goes on and on. And that's just one example, but the entire time they were getting all these reports that Freedom House is talking about this, Amnesty is talking about this, politicians across the political spectrum on the left and the right in the US and around the world are talking about this. The media is not covering it at all. They marginalize it, and when they do cover it, it's kind of mocking thing. And just dismissive of the serious allegations of human rights and just focusing on sensationalism. So I would agree with you absolutely. The mainstream press has failed at this. It's on its record. It's a blemish on its record that they've ignored this and many other human rights issues. The New York Times has a record going back to the movie Mr. Jones about the Ukrainian genocide. Same thing. fellow travelers not covering the story because wanting to maintain access. Just time and time again, we're seeing that. We're seeing that today. Fortunately, we have people like you and people in the alternative media community that allow these voices to get out. And, we're grateful to have this opportunity to get these stories out. Otherwise, people wouldn't know.
Yeah, exactly. And all we want to do on our side of the microphone, most of us, is tell the truth. Just present things the way they are so we don't descend. But here's what really concerns me, Amish, is that these people in America are beginning to take on the Chinese attributes of the CCP. We're seeing social credit that came out during the Biden administration. We're seeing extreme censorship from social media sites. I could never play this interview, for example, on YouTube, because it goes against the CCP. They'd ban me and they'd ban the piece. And across the board, the media is seems to be pro-Chinese abuse, or at least to cover it up, and not wanting to get the truth out. And this is what bothers me. But we're beginning to assimilate, and then we've had infiltration into our government from China. Can you address that a little bit? Are we overreacting when we say the Biden administration and other politicians are strongly influenced and underwritten by the Chinese government?
So there's a lot to unpack there. And I think that's such a critical question that has to do with all of our lives. So we have like these dual forces in a way. You have this force of the communist movement in general, and the CCP now carrying the baton of that movement. I think a lot of us, I'm old enough to remember the Berlin Wall coming down and disintegration of the Soviet Union. And I think we thought at the time the Cold War was over. That was the end of communism. And that's what the media would tell us. That's what we learned in school, but actually it's alive and well in Beijing. And it's not the same form as the Soviet, but they learned the lessons from Stalin and from Lenin, and they're implementing a lot of that along with techno-authoritarianism and all these other techniques that they have now. And it's getting even scarier with AI. So you have that movement. And if you look at a book by Skousen, Leon Skousen from The Naked Communist in 1959, and I think in his edition in 1961, he had this list of the communist movement's objectives. And I think there's about 45 items on that list. And if you go through that list that came out that he identified back then in the early 60s, you see that the communist movement has achieved most of those objectives, such as the disintegration of the family, control of the education system, control of the courts, things of this nature, the media, of course. And part of that is sowing discord in American society. And making it look like it's an organic and natural occurrence that people are fighting amongst each other, and just maybe even a symptom of democracy. That's what trying to portray it that way. And so what you see now is things like Chinese elements, CCP elements behind some of the protests, like we saw in the No Kings rally and things like that, where they can be traced. Some of the financial support can be traced back to the CCP and to fellow travelers on the American side, like Roy Neville. Singham, who was involved in supporting some of these organizations. And so you have that whole big trajectory of just the communist movement working slowly. They don't have to worry about midterm elections. They don't have to worry about pleasing the public. They can make 5, 50, 100-year plans to take over the world. And it sounds crazy to think about it. It sounds conspiratorial to say the CCP is trying to take over the world, but they've talked about it. If you look at some of the speeches that their military generals have given, you look at books like Unrestricted Warfare that came out over 20 years ago. They talk about the ultimate goal of their international diplomacy or military operations is to really gain control of the international stage, compete with the United States, and ultimately overtake the United States so they can tap into natural resources and gain global dominance and carry the flag of the communist movement. So when you see things that are happening here, and my friends who experienced the Cultural Revolution in China, these are people in their late 50s and early 60s who lived through it, who saw what Mao Zedong did. They were taken out of schools. They were forced to beat up their parents, to turn in their teachers. They saw people's heads getting blown open like watermelons on the street. They almost starved to death, and they were taken to the countryside where they worked hard labor with no training whatsoever. Some of them were in internment camps, and then finally they come back and they're supposed to not talk about it for the rest of their lives and pretend like everything is fine. And not to mention that in the process of all these campaigns that the Mao Zedong and the CCP ran through China, you have 60 to 80 million people who have died. So everybody's affected one way or another.
It's
So these
amazing.
people who went through this came to America, and then they see things like some of the social upheaval that we had the last few years in America, the smashing of statues. They say we saw this during the Cultural Revolution. We had to smash Confucian statues. We had to beat them to the ground. We had to burn temples. Now we're seeing statues of Washington and Hamilton being taken down and smashed. People being canceled, cancel culture. It's exactly what happened in the Cultural Revolution. You speak out of line. You can be turned on a dime, just very, very fast. One moment. And often just for reporting the truth. So you talked about how the media doesn't cover these stories. People were canceled for reporting what was happening with the Wuhan virus, right? For the stuff that people are saying now about the origins of COVID, they were canceled. They were deplatformed at the time. I have several friends like that who experienced this on YouTube or in other media.
Right.
And so this is basically, for many people, I think, very symptomatic of what they saw. And they said it's just like the Cultural Revolution again coming here to America. So that whole thing is just this one communist movement and how it's infiltrated so many parts of American society. And a big part of that is trying to undermine our faith in be they religious institutions or our own personal faith, because that's really what communism is about. It's the first thing it needs to do, and that's what Mao did in China, is to try to replace any sense of religious belief or faith in higher powers, the idea of consequences and what goes around comes around, karma, reincarnation, what have you. Any belief that there's more to life than meets the eye, that we have to be accountable morally for what we do here, is antithetical to the communist movement, because then they can't control you, right? They need to be able to tell you, this is your dad, he's a counter-revolutionary, go beat him up in the street if you know what's good for you, if you want what's good for China. And if you say, well, how, if you follow Confucian ideals and you believe that you will have to face your ancestors in the afterlife and be accountable, how are you going to go beat up your father on the street when you're supposed to follow filial piety and show respect? Right, so they have to wipe out this tradition that was there. And so Shen Yun comes around and says, well, we're going to show China before communism. And by doing that, we didn't actually set out to be political. We set out to just revive traditional Chinese culture. And myself, kind of like as an ambassador or like a bridge between these two cultures, I see this right away, because I know what the choreographers and composers and artists are talking about. They're talking about showing the virtues, the ideas of loyalty and compassion and humility and faith in the divine, and bring these out through the stories that really held the culture together for so many thousands of years. So the Chinese Communist Party sees this and they say, well, we can't have this because we spent 75 years trying to destroy this culture. And so now they have this massive transnational repression campaign that they started really from day one in 2006 against Shen Yun, or even before that. I saw it against Falun Gong in the early 2000s. And that's where you get into the stuff that you're talking about too, in terms of infiltrating political offices, in terms of spies at every level of government, from the governor of New York to a little small town in Southern California, to having individuals in media, having social influencers who are identified as assets of the Chinese Communist Party, people who are paid to promote Chinese Communist Party propaganda on YouTube. You have manipulation of the courts through lawfare and frivolous investigations that are started again by operatives of the Chinese Communist Party, spies, and on and on and on. The degree of infiltration of our society, of our academic institutes, our political institutes, our media, is something that we're not keeping up with. The FBI and our other organizations, they're way outnumbered, because the way the CCP operates, it can turn anybody. It doesn't have to be this kind of, James Bond type of spy who's been trained from youth. It could be anybody. It could be a real immigrant who moved to America for a better life, but has family back in China, and they use that against this person to get them to do what they want.
Yeah, they don't really have the three generational punishment that we see in North Korea, but there are implications for Chinese family members when their relatives go abroad and they go against the stream. I live in Arizona. I'll just give you an example of the infiltration. Our governor, our illegitimate elected government, in quotes, she vetoed a bipartisan amended bill. Democrats and Republicans passed this bill to stop the Chinese from owning farmland adjacent to our military bases. I'm waiting for Trump to step in. He needs to step into this right now and make it a national security issue. And this is how far we have been penetrated, right up to the governor's office. And you mentioned Hochul very quickly in passing, but the scandal with one of her former aides, senior aides, it's everywhere. And then the Biden family, I don't know how much money they took. Estimates are 20, 30 million for the family. The penetration is absolutely incredible, but it's the repression we need to worry about. Let me just tell you a quick anecdote. I got a phone call from the New York Times about 5 days before the 2016 election. And they tried to lead me into a trap that when you lose the election, are you going to promote a violent insurrection? And that was the direction the interview tried to take me. And I cut the interview off right there. And I said, you cover up what's going on in China. You covered up the Holocaust. You've covered up what happened in Rwanda. And you're okay if that happens to us. So I'm going to stop this conversation right here. And fortunately, they didn't print anything. But you mentioned the New York Times. I've had firsthand dealing. And one more thing that you said that I want to show you how it's gone to the West. The Falun Gong and the persecution there. Well, in Great Britain now, and to some extent in America, in Great Britain, they are arresting people for silent prayer in front of abortion centers. I don't know how they know it's silent prayer. Are they mind readers? But I mean, I have seen these accounts. And then here in this country, we've had pastors taken to jail for pretty similar activities. And a lot of it is tied to CCP interests. So this, and people don't realize the degree of penetration. The Chinese government has been brilliant in how they've infiltrated our US political system and media.
Yeah, unless you really dig into it and you have the kind of experiences that you've had, it's very difficult to really accept that connection that what's happening with people praying or taking God out of school assemblies and things like that. This is somehow connected to the Chinese Communist Party, or that the Black Lives Matter or Antifa, that any of these things are connected. But actually, if you trace it back down to the roots of what the communist movement is trying to do and where its starting point is, what it ultimately wants, it's a violently atheistic movement that is trying to remove any faith from our lives and wants the whole world to be shaped that way in under the banner of socialism. And so you actually it does actually work in some capacity for people who are if you're a liberal and you basically are not, or you're agnostic or you're atheist, and you don't believe that there is any higher power, and you're a kind person, and you say, well, I want to make the world a better place because I don't think there's any God doing that for us. What can we do? And then you easily go into the socialism route, and then basically that's where the communist movement generates its power, because you actually have these, the masses who actually, you have both the people who are in it for their own power and for the violence of it, and you have kind people who are useful idiots in this ride. And they actually are coming from a good place of trying to make the world better. So there's a homeless person, there's somebody who doesn't have social security. How can we help them? Well, let's have more socialism. It must be the rich people who are causing this problem. And if you have a belief, you realize there's greater forces at play, and it's a very different story. And it's not that we don't help each other, and we certainly do. Churches and other religious institutions have helped the poor for thousands of years. But that's what where the communist movement feeds itself. And so you see injustice, and you see, Trump or whatever you're upset about as a liberal, and you think this is all the fault of the capitalists, and therefore the alternative is socialism. And so you get into this mindset where now, well, my enemy's enemy is my friend, and so you have a lot of apologism for the CCP and Western media and the liberal media. They will not touch stories like the persecution of Falun Gong. They will not touch organ harvesting. They touch the Uyghurs a little bit because that's more Muslim, and that's aligned with things that they're interested in. But even that, not to the extent that it deserves in terms of the atrocities that are happening in Xinjiang. And you have this really hypocritical view where the ends justify the means.
Yeah, we're talking to Lishai Lemish, and you're getting an earful of what things are really like. I want to throw a name out at you. In 2017, I came across what was supposedly a leaked document from Wei Fang when he was reporting to the Central Planning Committee of China. And I guess not everybody was on board with this. And he advocated not only for the takeover of the United States, but we're not going to cohabitate, which basically means genocide for American people. Are you familiar with the allegation that the last four defense ministers of China have advocated for the same thing?
Well, I know that this goes back, I don't know how many defense ministers. One of the things that they said, I remember in speeches from these generals around, I think it was 2003 or four, they said things like, listen, we're willing to sacrifice the city of Guangzhou in southern southeast China for Los Angeles in nuclear war. Is the United States willing to sacrifice LA in war with us? They said, listen, our natural resources are not enough to support our population. We need large, massive territory like Australia, Canada, or the United States. And so we have to first send a lot of Chinese people as students or as workers to increase our percentage of the population there. You see this if you go to Australia and you go to New Zealand, you go to the airport, the signs are in English and Chinese in New Zealand. And you walk down the street, it feels like one big Chinatown in Auckland and Wellington, some of these bigger cities. So that's already working for them. But the idea that a nuclear holocaust is something that the Chinese Communist Party is willing to entertain, and they know that Americans really are not, especially after having gone through decades of the Cold War and that threat constantly, that they're perfectly fine with that. And this is official CCP strategy. This is not something that a few extremists in China are saying. Yeah.
That people just don't understand in this country. And this is why your organization's so good. I used to be a therapist, so I'll give you my psychological interpretation of why Shen Yun's so effective. You go there and you're entertained, and so your defenses are down, your political defenses are down, your pre-programming is relaxed because you're being entertained. But at the same time, embedded in that is very clever political message delivered about the repression and oppression that goes on. And I think that's one of the reasons why this has been so effective with American audiences.
Well, in China, anytime you say you speak your mind about what's happening, you're already being political. The only way that you're not being political is you shut up about everything and just take it. Then you're not being political.
Yeah, I
So
see.
that's what's happened with Falun Gong. They were people just meditating, and there were tens of millions of people, and they said that CCP said you can't do this, and they said why not? And okay, now you're being political. And so, this is the origin story of Shen Yun, and you're very, I think, correct in saying that art has a way of lowering your guards because you're there for entertainment, as this comedy, for example, right? What's that saying? If you open your mouth to laugh, you might accidentally take in some knowledge, right? It's the same idea with Shen Yun. Now, we didn't set out to be political, but it's you're coming to be entertained. You're coming to learn about a different culture, but you're getting a different perspective about China, including Chinese people. We have this from Chinese people from mainland China who say, this is where I found real traditional Chinese culture. I can't see this in China. I can only see it here. We perform in Taiwan, which is a whole other interesting story because it's just 100 plus miles away from China and it's completely free. And we perform 40 sold out shows there. And we have people from China who can afford to will fly out to Taiwan just to see Shen Yun. And I think what Americans realize specifically is they realize that, with China in the news so much in a negative light when it is in there, you feel like you actually don't have that much where you can connect with Chinese people. And what Shen Yun does is makes a very clear separation between the Chinese people, Chinese culture, Chinese civilization, and the Chinese Communist Party, right? Let me put it a different way. I would say that when you see Shen Yun, you realize in a way that Chinese people and American people have the same enemy, the Chinese Communist Party.
I would agree with that
Right?
entirely.
We're
I
not at
wonder.
war with them, but they're at war with us, and it's the same for the Chinese people.
Exactly. I've looked a lot at the pedophile empire, and at the root of it's occultic, it's satanic at the root, at the base. Maybe not all the practitioners, but a lot of it is there. I'm wondering, have you ever looked at what motivates at the deepest level the evil that comes out of the CCP?
There's an interesting series of commentaries about this called the Nine Commentaries, which came out in 2004. The Nine Commentaries on the Chinese Communist Party. This was written by editors of the Epoch Times in Chinese, was translated into English. It's available online. And it talks about the evil specter of the communist movement. It does have a lot of historical recounts of what happened, and it really does a good job of educating people about what the CCP actually has done over the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution and Anti-Three and the Anti-Five and the Counter-Revolutionaries and Tiananmen Massacre, all the way to Falun Gong and today. And at the same time, it has this more metaphysical look at communism as an evil force, as a specter that it basically has its own momentum, its own driving force. Some people call it satanic, and it's anti-belief, it's anti-faith, and so it's anti-God in that sense, and it's anti anything that is good about humankind. This idea of kindness and helping each other out, it's about divide and conquer. It's about making us fight against each other. It's about creating struggle between people, right? Zero sum games instead of win-win. And basically anything that's negative really aligns with the communist movement. And I think that's really a really good articulation of the forces behind the Chinese Communist Party. And what's interesting, you see this also in other communist regimes, North Korea, obviously today. I saw it under Stalin and Russia. And actually, when the Nine Commentaries came out, it sparked a massive movement in China of people, it's called Quit the CCP or Tui Dang in Chinese, which is people who read this and were so moved by it. And they said, okay, my eyes are open now. I see where we've been misled and deceived all these decades. I don't want to have anything to do with this. And they say, when I was in school, I raised my fist into the air and I swore in front of the flag that I'll dedicate my life to the blood red flag of the Chinese Communist Party. I now disavow that. I'm going to quit the CCP, even if it's symbolic. Including party members actually quit the CCP, but a lot of it is symbolic. You know, they had to join the Young Pioneers League and the Youth League and all these different things. They
Yes.
say, I'm not going down with this ship. I want history to know that I was against this. And there's about 500 million people who've signed on to this,
Are you
most of
talking
them in
about
China.
when, excuse me, but are you talking about the youth movement that's often labeled English translation, let it rot, where young people are not going into the system and they're staying at home with their parents and becoming the equivalent of domestic engineers? And I understand it's in big numbers. Is that what you're referring to
That's
there?
not that's not that's a that's an interesting side story. That's not what I'm referring to. I mean, they have that movement. They have the lie down and quit movement. They have all these different things.
Yes.
That's something else entirely, which is just I think has to do with this kind of nihilistic of realizing they don't really know what they're living for, because their faith has been taken away, their sense of purpose and autonomy has been taken away. All you have is the Communist Party. Now you realize the Communist Party is actually doesn't have your back at all. It has its own motivation. So what do you have? Just hard work for little pay, and you're not interested in anything. So people just lie down in the street and say, "I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with life. I'm done with this game." That there's that movement. What I was referring to is when you're in school in China, you know, anywhere from the countryside to the cities, when you go to school, you have to pledge allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party, and you have to join the Young Pioneers or the Youth League of the Chinese Communist Party. And if you want to have any advancement in your career, more times than not, you have to join the Communist Party, become a party member, become a cadre, and really toe the party line. And so everybody, in one way or another, had to choose. Are you going to go with the party, or are you going to be ostracized? And so with the Nine Commentaries and the Quit the CCP movement, what we saw is people nullifying their commitment to the Chinese Communist Party publicly, via petitions, via online statements saying, I don't want to be associated with the Chinese Communist Party. And it's 500 million people, you know, 500 million people have signed on to this, which, you know, and is closing in on half the population of China right now. So I think that that's a sense, I see it as something very hopeful and optimistic for the future, because really, you know, everybody in the West has always said, well, change in China has to come from within. And often that was used as justification for doing more business and making money and not caring about the consequences for the Chinese people and what they're facing, and even selling them technology like Cisco did that allows the CCP state to control people even more. But actually, here you do have a grassroots movement in China, people saying, often at great risk, we've had enough. We want something different. And so I think Xi Jinping is feeling that legitimacy crisis. He's feeling that there's no support from within in China and as well as overseas. And that's why, in a way, he's cracking down even harder on any form of dissent in China and overseas. And that's why also with Shenyun, we've seen the last 2 years or so an escalation in their transnational repression of our organization here in America.
I know there's different factions of power that are warring with each other right now inside the CCP, particularly coming out of the military, but I don't see the roots for a revolution that would restore any type of Chinese culture of the past or freedom for the future. Do you?
Besides what we're doing, which is bringing back the culture, as far as in China, we don't see that yet. You know, you had individuals like attorneys, especially people like Gao Zhisheng, who disappeared, I think, about 8 years ago, and wrote he had many essays and books that he wrote. A China More Just is one of them that's out in English, and he was someone that people saw as a potential leader for the future of China. Somebody who came from very humble beginnings. He grew up in a cave. And he ended up becoming an attorney, a self-taught lawyer, and helped all these these individuals who were on the wrong side of the CCP's oppression at great risk and eventually ended up being tortured and disappeared himself. His wife and daughter are here in America. So people like that, if he's still alive, there may be some people like that out there. But the CCP has done a very good job of crushing any form of potential forces that would replace them. And so I think what you're really seeing is it has to come from the culture. And again, this is not something that Chen Yun set out to do, is to say, okay, let's create a culture so that China has a better future and politically, but definitely a sense that what's held this civilization together is are the virtues, are the ideals of Chinese civilization. And then getting back to your point about people in the audience seeing Chen Yun and getting this message, when they see Chen Yun, they realize, wait a minute, if you strip away the Chinese Communist Party and all its cheap products and surveillance and geopolitical maneuverings and spying and buying land next to military bases and all this stuff and fentanyl, and you could go on and on. If you strip that away and just look at what the civilization once was, wait a minute, we have a lot in common. Faith in the divine, humility, courage, integrity. Your word matters, right? These are the ideals of Chinese civilization. We can actually get along with that, right? We actually are perfectly fine. You have your own Chinese food and you with chopsticks. We have our food and we eat with a fork, fine. But ultimately, as human beings, our traditional cultures are very, very similar and we have a lot in common. And I think that's the power of culture. Now, that might be a slower process compared to a militant uprising, but it does have, for me, I see hope in that.
I think it has to be an evolutionary process, like what you're describing. The Tiananmen Square comes to mind for me, that if someone rose up in China, some group, that would be their fate right now. I don't think there's the wherewithal to change it that way. But I think the slow erosion and the evolution is there. I can tell you it's effective with some Americans because I'm running into more and more people who talk about your organization and the effective message. I'm hearing this more where 5 years ago I didn't really hear it at all. And so I think your organization is being effective in that regard. But I'll tell you this, selfishly as an American, just looking at strictly as an American point of view, what your organization's promoting is a warning signal to America that you're starting to go down the same path that we did back under Mao Zedong.
I mean, there's some scary years there, especially right around COVID and the few years that followed that. And I think there's more resistance to that now. But at the time, it was like, wow, are we going to be facing the same situation as people living in China? And that's where I really feel the power of art and the power of the
Yes.
values behind them. And it can be through Chen Yun, it can be through other means as well. When people, I see them, I had opportunities to talk to people in the audience many times in a lobby after the show, and it just, they have a sense of something awakens inside of them, this idea of leading a moral life, of standing up for what's right, and realizing where these forces that are coming at us. And we depict it on stage very, very briefly. We have, I think, about 20 pieces of those, maybe a couple talk about the persecution of Falun Gong in China, and you see the force of the Chinese Communist Party coming down the innocent people, but then you see the courage of the resistance to it, and you see this spirit of hope and the sense, as Chinese people say, that there are greater forces at play, that there's 3 feet above your head are divine beings watching everything, and you kind of see it play out artistically, and I think that's really inspiring for people, even though it's a small part of the show. They see the courage of these people, including the performers. I was born in Ohio. I didn't experience persecution in China like these people did. But some of these people lost parents at a very young age and then escaped China, often, through a motorcycle to Cambodia or somewhere, and eventually joined Chen Yun Performing Arts. And they give voice to the voiceless people in China at great risk because they get death threats. We have had slashes on the buses, on the tires of our buses.
I've heard.
We've had, we're being slandered in the media. We see our Western English-speaking media co-opted in many ways. We've had officials on the U.S. government issue proclamations and then take them back under pressure from the CCP. But I do want to also say there are a lot of people who've been very, very have shown a strong backbone, a strong spine in supporting us, have come out to support us every year on both sides. Certainly, I think conservatives tend to more easily stand up for us, but we've had people on the Democratic side as well. Our own local congressman here in New York has been great. He's a Democrat. But it's really interesting. We have mayors coming across from different cities to come and give proclamations to this show and show their support. We've had people, like Tony Robbins, come and see the show and talk about its power. So it's really nice to see that support. But it's a slow process. in a way, kind of day in and day out. It takes everybody. It really takes everybody getting on the same page in terms of what really matters to us in our life and what kind of future we're leaving for our kids and our
I
grandkids.
think that's really well said, and you're to be commended for what you do. And let me just ask you this: people are going to hear this interview and they're going, "This is the first time I've heard about this." How do they follow the good work of your organization and even attend, one of the performances?
Well, thank you. I think, yeah, the best way is to experience it in person and get tickets and come see us. And if you happen to see this interview and I'm on stage, see if you can get a message across and maybe I'll come out and say hi. That'd be fun. The way to find us is shenyun.org is where you learn about the organization. That's shenyun.org. You can learn about the artists. You can learn about the stories. We recently had an article about how many of our artists, we counted 92 of them, had been directly impacted by persecution in China. We have their stories up there. We have a lot of videos. And, we're talking here about a lot of these kind of heavier topics, but the performance itself is very uplifting. You have these crazy characters like the Monkey King who fly through the air, this animated backdrop, there's beautiful costumes. It's very positive. You have ethnic and folk dances. But so you get this whole spectrum of Chinese civilization, and certainly the political aspects are part of that. So shenyun.org to learn about us, shenyun.com to just get tickets. I also have a podcast where I interview performers if you want to hear from them more directly. It's called Shenyun Voices. You can find that on our you can find that on wherever podcasts are available, including for now at least YouTube. So Shenyun Voices, that's another one. And I think more in general, if you want to learn about the persecution of Falun Gong and what's happening in China, including organ harvesting, things of that nature, a great website for that is the Falun Dafa Information Center, which is faluninfo.net, FalunInfo.net.
I've got that one, and it's on our list. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and America loves an underdog, particularly a noble underdog. And the more that it becomes awareness here, the more I think your organization is going to grow. And I really appreciate you spending the time to come on and talk to us. Our guest has been Lishai Lemesh, and I'll tell you, I wouldn't expect someone from the London School of Economics to be such a down to earth. Let's support basic human rights. I mean, they're more like highfalutin economics stuff. It's an interesting combination, but it gives you, I'm sure, a unique perspective. I've been very impressed with your presentation here, and I'm very impressed with the organization. And it's something that America better take a strong look at, folks, because we got people that want to take us down this path. And I hate to be political at the end of this, but a lot of them reside in the Democratic Party, but not exclusively. Lishai, thank you so much for joining us for a really good interview. Hope to have you back sometime as events warrant.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We're brought to you by Noble Gold. And Noble Gold is your way out of this financial nonsense we're in, and we're going into even deeper and more dangerous. We're about ready to hit dangerous waters. We're being towed into deep water. And I hope Trump can stop it. I certainly think he's slowing some of it down, but I don't know that it's turned around, and you got to protect yourself. Noble Gold is the way you do it. First of all, if you can't hold the gold, you don't own it. That's the first thing. Second thing, some people are putting all their eggs in one basket, doing everything in the market. That's ridiculous. Nothing wrong with having stuff in the market. I have stuff in the market. There's good things to do. I use Trade Genius. I follow what they tell me. You should too. But the bottom line is gold is king. Oh, silver's good. Crypto's good. We're going to talk about those later today too. But gold is king. And you need to be involved in gold. Now, I'll tell you, they're going to give you for first-time qualified buyers. That's really cool. 10 ounce silver American flag. 1 ounce silver coin. Pretty cool stuff. First time. The bottom line is, people, if you don't move and do what the wealthy are doing now, you're going to end up 1929 and you're not going to be able to escape the Great Reset. You can kill two birds with one stone. That's a topic unto itself. Now, the federal government wants me to tell you, the FTC in particular, no investments guaranteed. We totally agree with that. But show me where gold has faltered. I can't think of an instance historically. Okay, but I'm giving the warning in good faith. I've been a customer for almost 8 years, just did a deal last week with Noble Gold, and also too, I'll continue to do deals with Noble Gold. You should too. 877-646-5347. Call 877-646-5347. Well, an old topic has been kicked around a lot here and around the net and on radio, not too much on TV. But the bottom line is we have an economic dictatorship and it's ripping you off. Let's go back historically. Federal Reserve comes in under very, very shady circumstances. Most people in Congress weren't told what was coming. They go home for the holiday, and the select few that were told had just enough to make a quorum, and they changed everything. And not only did they bring in the Federal Reserve, which I still believe is unconstitutional, Congress shall have the ability to coin money. Doesn't say it can delegate it to somebody else, which is what they did in 1913 in that small quorum. But also the income tax system came in. Now, let me explain to you, and I'm going to intertwine some concepts here. Donald Trump is in a huge debate and feud with Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve because they're keeping interest rates up. Big corporations, of which many Federal Reserve people at their regional banks are involved in, and their cronies are involved in, benefit from overseas cheap labor where there is no EPA, there is no workplace guidance safety procedures like we have here, there's no time and a half for overtime, there's no mandatory breaks, there's no age restrictions. Oh, we know how that works overseas. That's been fairly well publicized. But big corporations want to be able to go overseas for the cheap labor. And part of the reason the elite turned their head the other way with the mass illegal immigration is because these people will work for cheap. They work off the books. Maximum tax deductions is what they do. But they can't complain to anybody if they're mistreated. I think it's horrible abuse of human beings. People say, you care about the illegals? Yeah, we're all one blood. And I care how they're treated. And they're treated like garbage by the corporations. Seriously. Now, are there exceptions? Yeah, there's some exceptions, not many. So the corporations, the big ones, the Fortune 500s, they want their productions offshore. Donald Trump wants to build you up. Now, here's the deal. Trump says, okay, we're going to tariff you guys for bringing your products back into the country. Well, this goes against Federal Reserve policy. So, how does the Federal Reserve counter Donald Trump's tariffs on American corporations gone to foreign countries, sending those goods back into the country and saving a ton of money on labor costs? Well, what the Fed does is raise the interest rate. And now, these corporations, to do business in America, they got to get into this system with high interest rates. Well, it's easier just to stay offshore and pay the tariff. And this is what Jerome Powell is doing. The interest rates allow the corporations leverage to stay offshore. Now, if Trump had his way, interest rates would be low and they should be below 3% right now. We just balanced the budget. For the first time since the Clinton administration, should be 3%. And that's too high. Should be actually 1%, but I'll grant you 3%. That's what it should be based on what the figures are telling us from the government. But they're not, because the feds are trying to feather their nest, feather their own cap by high interest rates domestically. Okay, now. Tariffs are going to raise prices in that environment. If we had a low interest environment, there'd be no reason for prices to go up. Corporations could borrow money cheaply, make money, invest, grow, hire more. And you're saying, well, Dave, how do you know that would work? Well, gee, it worked pretty well for 101 years. 1812 to 1913, that's how this country did business. We didn't have an income tax. We didn't need an income tax. But it was only when the Federal Reserve says, you know, if we got control of the money supply and use our influence in Congress, we can have make work projects like $100 toilets in that day. And the taxpayers will pay for it out of the money we're collecting from taxes they didn't have before. And also, we're in an environment now in 1912, 1913, where we're opening up foreign markets in Asia and Latin America. Remember gunboat diplomacy? And we want to be able to locate offshore, not pay a tariff to come back in to sell our goods. Tariffs protect American jobs if the interest rates are low, plain and simple. And this is how we're being taken advantage of. Federal Reserve are helping the elite corporations, in which many of them are involved in these corporations. It also helps banking and lending. Interest rates are high. It's wonderful. It's wonderful because you're going to make more money on loans when they're artificially high. Problem is, it slows down growth in your country. It retards your economy. But as long as the wealthy and their corporations make money, who cares? It's only the people that are suffering. It drives up the cost of housing, drives up the cost of starting a business. It eliminates a lot of small business startups. Well, that's what they want. They don't want competition. So this is why the Fed keeps the interest rates high. Trump could make America attractive with low interest rates. And eventually, we would have no income tax because these corporations are monolithic. They could produce so much coming out of America. Would the profit drop a little bit for the Fortune 500 corporations if they had to reshore in America? Yes. And that's why you're not seeing it. You're being ripped off America. And you can thank the Federal Reserve for the high interest rates. There's another factor too. Trump's policies run in the face of Federal Reserve associated business interests. I think we all know that. So to oppose interest rates lowering is to work against Trump and what he's trying to do. The global community, business-wise, wants a global economy. They don't care about rates of exchange and this and that, and the IMF. They don't care as long as they're making money. There could be 1,000 currencies in the world as long as there's centralized unification somewhere. And today that resides in the IMF. They don't want the dollar and every other currency subservient, because now they got to stay here and their labor costs will go up some because of EPA workplace regulations. You get the idea. And Biden played right into this. The world generally charges 21% corporate tax. Biden raised it to 28. Now Trump has now brought it back down. He didn't want corporations here. He's helping these corporations, when he did that, to move offshore and save money now on high taxes on corporations, of which we are one of the highest in the world. And Trump is working to bring that down as well, too. I hope this starts to make it clear to you. The Federal Reserve is not your friend. They should never have been allowed to get control of the economy. They're an unconstitutional entity. There's no provision for them in the Constitution. The power with money resides in Congress, and in spending, it resides exclusively with the House of Representatives, with executive discretion and the executive power rooted in the presidency. It's that simple. But we have now bastardized this system, and the glorification is for the elite at your expense. This is your money. This is why you don't have as many jobs. And then add AI to that. What do you think that the elite want to do with AI? We've covered that extensively. They want AI. They don't want to pay you. AI doesn't demand breaks. Simple. I'm Dave Hodges. This is The Common Sense Show.